The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Now, we're delighted to be joined by Congressman Joe Kennedy, who many of our listeners will remember as the special envoy to Northern Ireland under the Biden administration. Congressman, we might start with that role as special envoy to Northern Ireland. How important was it, that role, given, of course, your family's long links with Ireland?
Look, it was an extraordinarily important role for me. And I am beyond grateful, not just to President Biden and the Biden administration for allowing me to serve in that capacity, but to the people of Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland for the warm embrace with which I was received, for giving me a chance to do a lot of listening and a lot of learning. I obviously knew how special a place that island is for so many people, but to be able to spend consistent time, to be able to build relationships, obviously across community in Northern Ireland, and to see what Northern Ireland is building in terms of a community that I think oftentimes in the United States we still think of as post-conflict, and certainly that conflict, while being nearly 30 years past now, is still very present for so many. To see how far Northern Ireland has come and how far community and society has come was really not just incredible to see, but extremely inspiring as well.
And you're convinced of the, it's interesting to hear you talk about that progress, because I suppose sometimes it feels like change isn't happening quickly enough, that the divisions are still very entrenched.
Look, I think if you ask folks in the United States about our progress for gender equality, racial equality, the progress that has made since our Civil War through the 1960s and 70s, many of those battles are still being fought today across our society, in terms of the policy and culturally and across our society. That being said, there is no question about the progress that has been made over the course of that time, despite the fact that there's still mountains to climb here. Nobody can say that progress hasn't been made. I had this conversation with a gentleman actually here in Boston earlier today, saying that on one of his prior visits to Belfast years ago, right, there were no trash cans in the streets because people were afraid that somebody could put a bomb in them. So I can understand the frustration. Progress never moves quite as fast enough as many of us would like. But think back to where we were, in the mid-1990s, and think of what Northern Ireland is today.
Yeah, okay. That is a very fair point. Just finally on Northern Ireland, Sinn Féin believe that there should be a border poll on whether the North should join the Republic of Ireland by 2030. Do you have a view on that? Do you have a view on whether that would happen in that kind of time frame, or should happen in that kind of time frame?
No, look, there's a process laid out by the Belfast Good Friday Agreement about what the way in which there would be a border poll in the south, a poll in Northern Ireland, and what the steps would be needed to be made there. And that ultimately, obviously, is going to be a question for the people of Ireland and Northern Ireland. I think what I saw from my time there is people really focused on making sure that they were able to build a community where everybody was able to get a job and have access to good schools and good healthcare and the basic aspects of meeting basic need. And so focusing on that, and, I think there's still progress to be made on many of those levels, as there is here in the United States. But I'd focus on that and see what comes in the future. That's a question for the people over there.
Okay. Can I ask you about politics in America right now?
Sure.
Yeah. Do you despair at how divided America is at the moment in terms of political engagement, political debate? Does it? Can you see any grounds for optimism?
Do I despair about the tone of our rhetoric? Like, yes, of course I do. We are, we're speaking, obviously, and just days after another assassination attempt on the President of the United States, which is horrifying and horrific. The threats coming at my former colleagues, are essentially continual. The dehumanization that gets spouted at elected officials is dangerous for all involved. And it continues to pull our communities apart and our society apart. I will say it was it was eye-opening for me to be able to spend time in Northern Ireland in a society that often gets categorized as post-conflict in the United States, and see the level of restraint with which elected officials would talk to members across parties. And yes, there were obviously debates and there was campaigns and there was deep divides on policy and politics, but you didn't have the same level of threat and dehumanization that we are seeing here in the United States. I do think in that regard, we have a lot to learn from Northern Ireland.
Would that deter you? Because obviously you were a congressman for, I think it was at least four terms. You ran for the Senate as well. Would it deter you from re-entering electoral politics? I know you're still very much involved in activism, but would it deter you from returning to electoral politics?
Look, governance matters, and governance in the United States certainly matters. And government is the way in which we set the rules and incentives for the rest of our society. And so you need people there. And I think if I thought that I could have something to offer and do a good job there, that's something I'd consider. But I also have young kids. I get to see them. The quality of life, the sad reality is that the quality of life is so much better outside that world than it is inside it at the moment, where I get to focus on a number of issues that I care deeply about and that I think are affecting our society, about community building, about delivering on renewable energy and an energy transition and making sure that families can afford electricity and their basic needs and a number of other social issues here across Massachusetts and across the country, while being able to show up at my kids' sports games and coach them and see them. And so at the moment, I'm very happy where I'm at. We'll see what the future brings, but certainly the quality of life is a factor that anybody would take into account.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Can I ask you, Congressman, obviously you're part of a legendary family in the Kennedys, and I'm sure your family's record in public service is something that gives you huge pride. But as someone in electoral politics, as a Kennedy, does that bring pressure? Does it bring a legacy that can be hard to bear? I'm kind of curious how you found that.
My family means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. It is no question a challenge of, look, it is an extremely extraordinary blessing that when you are in public life, people say all the time, they project the values and the successes and the aspiration that I think my family represents to a lot of people, which is a tremendous honor and privilege. It is also a challenge in that many of my relatives happen to be some of the best orators and legislators and public servants, in modern American history. So, if you're given a speech and somebody compares it to President Kennedy's inaugural, that's a hard level to match. And so without question, there's a kind of a romanticized conception about many of our heroes. And so trying to be compared to those folks on any given day is a challenge. It's also the reality. And so you make your peace with the fact that people, I think, mean it, intend it as a compliment, even though it doesn't, it can be hard to live up to. But ultimately what those individuals dedicated their lives to was trying to find ways to make our community and our country stronger, fairer, more inclusive, and better.
Yeah, I read an interview in which I thought you spoke really eloquently about your uncle, who of course people will know as health secretary, and you said, look, he's my uncle. He's a really nice guy. I love him as a family member. He's so many great attributes. But I disagree with him on politics, and that's fine. But family comes first. Right, we disagree on many issues, and it kind of struck me that maybe there isn't enough of that kind of thinking in the US at the moment, that, you know, that ability to disagree with someone and but still get on with them on a personal basis?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, America is struggling with its a term of tribal politics at the moment, and the kind of self-separation that then comes with it. You know, I think all of us right here across society can find opportunities to be reminded of times when we're actually not looking at, you know, political virtue signaling and whatnot. In the midst of the horror and the chaos that transpired at the correspondence dinner this past weekend, there were Democrat and Republican public servants that were covering other people, that were laying down on top to shield other people, right? That was not just one side of the aisle or the other. That was individuals caring for strangers and protecting people they did not know in the midst of a horrific incident. And no one that I'm aware, and I know of Democrat and Republican that shielded other people, the people they shielded, they didn't ask, are you a Democrat? Are you a Republican? They just protected one another. And so, you know, we have natural disasters here. Nobody that I've ever seen, after a hurricane that we saw in Texas years ago, when there were folks in small little boats going to try to rescue other folks, didn't ask who they voted for, didn't ask what party they belonged to. They just helped. And so the opportunity to be able to remind people of that and get to that, and, you know, to think that we would do anything other than that is obviously crazy. But let's get back to finding ways to cross those bridges rather than to widen the divide.
Yeah. A couple of last things, Congressman, if you have time. I know you have very strong views about what the Democratic Party need to do if they're going to be in a position to regain the White House, and obviously before then regain the Senate in the midterm elections. What would you like to see the Democrat Party do? Do you think they've become too metropolitan, too elite? I'm curious for your take.
Parties end up following politicians, and politicians end up kind of segmenting to the folks that they are, to their constituents, right? And so obviously the gerrymandering and the segmentation that we're seeing across society does no favors to either Democrats or Republicans, even if it means you win more seats or you protect more seats. The segregation that we then see because of it doesn't actually help on the governance and the delivering of the basic needs to American families. The fact is that politics is about people, and people want to make sure their basic needs are met. They got food on their plate, roof over their head, a kid in a good school, safe and secure retirement. And so I think for a Democratic Party to focus on ensuring that the policies we are trying to craft address those needs, that the language we're using is focused on addressing those concerns, and to maintain a discipline about focusing on how we're going to make people's lives better.
Okay. I can't let you go without asking you about international events, not just in Iran, but also Ukraine and Gaza. Do you, again, going back to an earlier question, do you despair about where the world is going right now? Do you think there is a potential resolution in relation to the war in Iran at the moment?
Look, I don't see how you could look around the world at the moment and not have your heart break for the bombings that we're seeing, you know, our Russian invasion of Ukraine, you know, the devastation we've seen across parts of the Middle East, and obviously a war in Iran that's causing enormous amounts of pain and hardship, not just in Iran, but elsewhere. And then the knock-on economic effects that are starting to be felt across the global economy. But, you know, we haven't quite seen this yet, but when fertilizer prices spike, when access to fertilizer gets harder, when that lack of fertilizer leads to less crop yields, when the price of food spikes, when access to food goes down, when starvation goes up, this is going to be, you know, potentially economically and devastating for millions of people across the world and particularly the global South. So yes, you know, I think anybody paying attention to this, you have to be grieving. I hope that there's solutions ahead. That's going to take some effort on behalf of this administration. It's also going to take a willingness on behalf of an Iranian leadership to to recognize that while they also have cards to play here, that it, a lot of people will get hurt and harmed if they don't address their end of this bargain as well. And, you know, one would hope at some point here we get to a place where we recognize some of the lessons of Northern Ireland, right? We engaged in a strategy of, you know, domination and annihilation for 30 years. And at the end of the Belfast Good Friday Agreement, adherents of both sides of those ideologies were still there. Protestant, Catholic, Unionist, Nationalist, they're still there. The idea that peace is going to be determined by dropping bombs and missiles and bullets, like, humanity has proven otherwise.
Okay, we will leave it there. Congressman Joe Kennedy, grandson of Bobby Kennedy, thank you indeed for talking to The Hard Shoulder.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric Range.
Weekdays at 4 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.